Good morning. So we are in a sermon series called Dear Anonymous, and we've been focusing on letters and notes left to the staff and ministry leaders of the church. And last week, Pastor Sam talked about anonymous letters that questioned the music in the church, right? So if you missed that one, you want to check that one out online. It's worth listening to. And really, all of the sermons in this series have been super helpful. Check them out online. The week before last, Pastor Chris talked about, I mean, she basically gets all the easy sermons. She talked about the Beast of Revelation. So you did good, Chris. And then the week before that, Pastor Devo talked about why we dress the way we dress in church. In fact, because I am an active and good listener, before we go any further, I too have asked Pastor Vaughn to come and help me wear a tie so that I too may be a legitimate pastor this Sabbath. Let us wait. It's gonna happen.
Here we go.
Probably have to talk. I don't really wear ties, but I think this is a good time for that. It's a really good, typical girl problem. My collar's too small. Right, Chris? Just, gosh, it's never gonna look as good as yours. It's fine.
We'll try.
Okay, just.
There we go.
Okay, just.
I'm gonna straighten it. There we go. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Yes or yes? Well, it's happening, so here we are. There now? We're legitimate. So Pastor Vaughn addressed evangelism the week before that, and so it has been so insightful, even for myself as someone on the staff as we have these conversations, to listen about these topics happening here in the congregation. I myself, though, am not the frequent recipient of such anonymous letters that we have been talking about, not in the ways that the other pastors have spoken about, at least. But I do, however, get a different kind of interaction. I, in company with the rest of the pastors, in fact, am a frequent recipient of verbal letters that sound a little bit more like this. Dear Pastor, you know what the church should do? And then it's followed by something like this. The church should start a prison ministry. I see it, The church should start a ministry for single people like you, Pastor Bev. Put that away. You know what the church should do? They should start a daycare for our kids because Azure Hills has a daycare. How come our church doesn't have a daycare, Pastor Bev? You know what the church should do? They should start a club for retired members. And this is where Will Clark sits there and goes, we have one. We have one. You know what the church should do? We should start a club for bikers. You know, why doesn't the church start a ministry to preach to the homeless and or to prostitutes? Or, here's a fun one that Pastor Austin got, why don't we take the youth to Mexico this weekend? And so they go like this, signed, church member. And many of these are great ideas, like, yes, please, absolutely, we should all go to Mexico. Virgin pina coladas, don't worry. So why, you ask, would these such topics come in a sermon series like this one? Well, for this reason, the reason for its place in this particular series is because it turns out that many of these requests and suggestions, while they are exciting to think about, no one actually wants to be the one to lead them out. So really, a letter like this, followed by a person who walks away, is just as good as an anonymous letter. So here's another one I get quite frequent in this same category. Dear Pastor, you know what the church really needs? You need more volunteers. You guys should really get more volunteers. And so then the conversation goes a little bit like this with anonymous person. Yes, actually, absolutely, I think that you're right. What do you think? Do you want to volunteer? And then our person says this, who, me? No, I have a lot going on right now. It's just probably not a good idea. Or something to the effect of, who, me? Oh, no, 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 I'm saying that you actually need somebody who's good at that. Like, I'm not good at that, so you need to find somebody who's good at that. And so, in fact, the conversation goes like this over and over and over again. A church like ours that has a membership of nearly 3,000 people will typically have about 20% of that population that actively is involved in the everyday life of the church, which means that the other 80% of us have never actually volunteered or committed to a church community activity or volunteered in such a way other than being present and sitting here in the pews on Sabbath. Yikes, right? This is about the time where some of us kind of begin to shift in our seats a little bit, like, I think she's talking about me. Or some of us are kind of like, I just all of a sudden have something in my eye and I don't need to look up at the pastor right now, right? We're just avoiding eye contact, it's good. Don't worry, this really isn't a sermon to guilt trip us into volunteering, no. In fact, today we think more carefully about the reasons why belonging to a church community where the people are engaged and actively participating in the church life is actually incredibly significant to our experience of the gospel. The struggle of people being involved in their faith communities, well, it's not a new phenomenon. Acts chapter 6 takes us back to a community with familiar dilemmas. Verse 1, in those days when the number of disciples was increasing, the church was growing, which means that there was a lot to attend to. In fact, this verse mentions that there was so much stuff going on that stuff was getting overlooked, like widows being overlooked when the food was being distributed, right? With so many members joining every day, I can imagine that sometimes things fell through the cracks. So we read Hellenistic Jews or Gentiles or non-Jews that had converted into Judaism, they were complaining to the Hebraic Jews or the native Jews or the longtime members of the church Jews who were either not doing enough or what they were doing was not helpful. So it sounds like they were having a dear pastor moment to me, right? Verse 2, so the 12 gathered all the disciples together, and they said, it would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the word or the mystery of the table, like Ty and Gracie read today. Good job, guys. Identifying that perhaps it was time to call in reinforcements and to share the load. They asked the congregation to choose 7 men from among them that are filled with the Spirit and wisdom. The disciples recognize that it's time for them to let go of something so that something else might be attended to. So after their church nominating committee meeting is through and the people have been chosen, the author of Acts describes that the word of God spread and the number of disciples in Jerusalem yet again increased rapidly. With so many different schools of thought on what these 7 verses might mean, I wondered this week, how is it that these 7 verses mean something for our context of believers, both those of us who are new converts, and those of us who have been residents of the church for decades. Maybe this. Maybe the people wait on the lead disciples to solve the problem. Maybe there is a clear hierarchical formula in this period that's creating a tension among the people. Not because they were selfish and not because they had this tendency to hoard the duties, but because in the first church, their primary business of the apostles, the evangelists, and the bishops was to preach the word. The secondary then to take paternal care, right? Like the church became this family of theirs for food and especially to the poor and then strangers and then to take care of the widows. And then afterwards, of both sexes were constituted for later business, right? And whatever time they had to spare for this, then they employed for work in spiritual mercy. So what if they too had the 20-80 problem, 20% of the people doing 80% of the work, and the natural progression of such few people carrying the load of the church is fatigue and burnout? What if they were so maxed out and fatigued that they could not be excited about something more to do? And so being in charge, they pushed forward and they did what they could with the leaders that they had, and it likely signaled to the rest of the community that they had this, we got this mentality. It strikes me that perhaps our staff here can also give this vibe out, that in order to be involved, that you have to go through a pastor first. And on behalf of the staff, if we have said anything like this on this stage here or in whatever other context, to suggest that we own this place, we are sorry. We have misspoken, and we are learning to adjust our language. It is the church that comes together and that thrives. And while we love serving as your pastors, we recognize that the pastors are not the church. Well, we're not the only thing that makes the church. Administrators of the larger world church, they are not the entirety of the church. While these leadership roles play this beautiful role in this larger picture of what the church could be, we have to acknowledge that there's going to be a day when there will no longer be pastors to pastor the churches, and there will not be administrators to administrate in the buildings. There was a moment for of reflection for me this last week when I, alongside with the rest of the pastoral staff, we boarded an airplane to San Antonio, Texas, one of my favorite places, just kidding. And we were going to attend a homiletical conference. And maybe I was channeling like my inner paranoid traveling self. I think everybody has one of those. You know, that's the one that goes through the worst case scenarios when you're traveling, right? And well, when a very real thought came to my mind, you know, the one that no one expects to be the freak accident in the news that tells you about the freak accident, right? But what if something actually happened to our plane? What if we didn't make it back? What if the church that we gathered in all of a sudden collapsed and eight of your pastors didn't come back to church? This was a real thought. And I shamefully have to betray to you that the first thoughts going through my mind were, holy cow, who's going to play piano in Tiny Tots this weekend? And then the second thought was, oh my gosh, who's going to lead VBS? Here's a shameful plug. Yes, it's July 10 through 14, and sign-ups start June 1 for all of the volunteers, kids and adults, okay? But who's going to run all of the things? In the midst of this brief moment of panic that I'm sure that actually each and every one of the pastors had, I know Chris had it, and one of the other pastors, we were talking about this, it also dawned on us that we're a 3,000-member church. Friends in Jesus, there are 3,000 of us that belong to La Sierra University Church. And we thought the people of the church would rally. Because in the face of crisis, we are brilliant at rallying. When crisis has happened around the world, it's this community that has signed card after card and sent it to families and loved ones of those who lost someone in a shooting. It's this community that gathers funds for our homeless friend, for people like our homeless friend Mike, who, when he peacefully died away in our cafe one morning, we rallied to raise the funds so that his family could give him a worthwhile burial. It was this community, right? It's this community that rallies that when our students at the university or at the academy have no more financial options to keep themselves in school, you come together, we come together, and we provide funds so that they can continue their education. In today's passage, the church would come to grow, not just because of the word that was preached, but also because of the hospitality of the church that came from the people who served the church. For many of us, we have been living in this life of service and participation for a long time. This is what we've always done. It too is a reason why this community is thriving and active. And some of us, well, we have not waited. Some of you haven't waited for the pastors to initiate or ask you. You have just launched into community living because you couldn't otherwise be who you are. This is just how you are built. So this is not a sermon to diminish or belittle the 20% or even the 80% on the other side, because you 20%, you are mighty and you are incredible. And every year we reflect on how incredible it is to do life with such a 20%, rallying strong. So we recognize that not only would the church rally in the face of crisis, but the church would rally because this is what the church does. This is who we are, La Sierra. So here are some ways in which the church is living and thriving, because many of you have said yes to active life in church without a pastor asking you to do so, and we would love to take the credit, we would, but you are the ones that are teaching us throughout the years the definition of communal church. Let's check this out. I've got a few pictures for you. So it's a little bit dark here, but this is our knitting blanket club, right? And these friends in Jesus gather every month to knit things. Sometimes they're blankets, sometimes they're beanies, and they go to elderly community shut-ins, little babies at the hospital that don't have clothes to wear the next morning. Let's check the other one out. This is our Fearless Cafe folks a while ago, standing very hopeful, hoping to engage other folks, but these three faces you have seen at a constant at the cafe every Sabbath. Next one. These, we call this part of the dream team, not just because they are dreamy, but because their taste buds have taken us to different worlds. Don't lie, if you were here during 4 days with Jesus, you were blessed. Part of our social committee that cooks and does all the things. Thank you for what you do. This is a group of people. This is our community service group. I had a picture of them of this last Christmas gathering together. Pastor Chris, how many people volunteer? This is all just volunteer, well over 70 people every week. Every week they gather here to celebrate. Let's see the next one. Here's another one. Some of us, we rally without having a big burden or somebody asking. This is our Damaso project, and we said we needed help to clean the space up. Some of you came and you got really involved. Let's see the next one. Here's another Damaso one, right? And not only did you come, but you brought your little ones, because we don't just do things singularly. We do things as a family, right? We've got some kiddos here. Let's see the next one. And sometimes we sacrifice our shoes and our socks and our wardrobe, and we just get in there, right? Next one, let's see the next one. And this is all of you painting the inside of the Damaso building. You gave up an entire Sunday. This is brilliant to be with you, to see it transform. See the next one. And some of us come packaged with incredible gifts, and some of you have joined Elvin here with his brilliant piano playing, and you fill this entire space with your voices and this entire church with voices, because it is who you are. See the next one. And this beautiful face, who we've recognized from a while back, without being asked, was so committed that kiddos go to the academy, that him and Nan, show the next one, created a festival every year where you could come and eat and donate food, and all of those funds, they went to fund tuition aid for kiddos at the academy. Beautiful work, what a beautiful legacy. And these cool people here, one day, Jeff comes up to me and says, this is what I naturally do in my life. I hike all of the places. If I'm not sleeping or working on somebody's heart, I'm on a mountain. And he wanted to share that with with the people here. And because he did, this is who showed up. And this is one of our smaller groups hiking out in one of the places. About 45 of us gathered and hiked and lived in the outdoors. A beautiful ministry that's come about. Let's see the next one. And here we have Kelly. It's actually the one Kelly over there waving, although Angie and I are in this picture. And Kelly here, sometimes you might not see Kelly, but she organizes greeters for us. And if you ask Kelly if she loves greeting, she hates it. But she knows that this is the way that she can contribute, because she's got organizational skills like nobody knows. And so she can organize the people to greet. And these two fun faces you saw up today, sometimes they're up here and sometimes they're in the wings, because they're also, they do what Candace does, and they keep this entire service functioning for us. It's Marjorie and Sada. I didn't tell you about this picture, surprise. Let's see the next one. Let's see what we have next. And here is someone you probably don't recognize the back of his head, but this is Ruben Tejeda, who makes sure with Pastor Devo that we are fully functioning people in audio. Let's see the next one. And this is actually Adam, it's his kiddo, also helping us make this place function. The next one. And then we have David, who keeps us honest with our microphones. That's Pastor Chris in her office behind the scenes a little bit here. All right, and then here we have some more Damaso. Even though Ron is now working with our local community garden right outside, there is stuff growing and booming because Ron needed to plant the things. And now there are students that need to plant things also. Let's go to the next one. And here is a few faces that maybe you can't see as much, but these are parents. Some of you who are here, dads who are coaching soccer and some other sports throughout the entire year. They don't get paid, they give their time. This is what community is about. And here we have Vanessa, who's gonna be, even in the midst of her life and her kiddos, she is going to be helping us with something called the Curtain Call. It's a theater initiative for our kiddos here and families. Let's see the next one. And one of my favorite times of the year is when our church is busting and booming with volunteers for VBS, singing and praising, and this entire church is filled with kids, 200 volunteers, and then 300 plus children. Our church does rallying well because we are a community. The word servant that translates the word deacon, diakono, and it isn't just a male deacon, but female deacons too now in this time. And it was not a formal office or a title then as it is now, but the disciples gathered, serving around in groups, and then they prayed for the people that were going to be serving because it wasn't about the things that the new deacons would be doing or even because they were going to be doing more, but it was because theory now was becoming praxis. At the end of the book of Matthew, Jesus commissions believers to go out and to make more believers, right? He's calling the people to a more radical way of living because this way of living was one that moved the leadership of the church from the temple directors to the people of the community. Jesus extends the table so that all people have a seat at the table to dwell and to live alongside with Jesus. In verse 5 and 6 of Acts, chapter 6, the names of the people, if we recognize and see, that are chosen are actually not names of people chosen from indoctrinated leaders or anything from religious order. No, in fact, actually the names that you see written were Greek names. They were indicating that the people who had been called upon to be servants and serving the church were actually local community members, some of which were converts to Judaism and to the early church. It's the people who matter here. The relationships from the community that rise up to sustain the church. So we say thank you, 20%. Those pictured and the number who are not pictured who tirelessly work behind the scenes to make church life happen around here. So what now that if we are not a part of this 20%? And we have a really good idea, but we really don't want to be the one to do the thing that we think is a really good idea. We have to admit that joining a church community is actually a rather vulnerable experience, right? And sometimes there are things at a church and in a church space that needs to get done, and nobody wants to do the things that need to get done. So time to tell the truth now, right? Putting up chairs and setting up tables is one of my least favorite things to do in the entire world. I don't know what it is about it. It's just the monotonous putting up the chairs, putting them out. And yet somebody needs to put up the chairs and somebody needs to set up the tables, right? And nobody wants to be the one who takes out the trash after a big social, right? Not here. That's a lot of trash. Have you been here before? It's a lot of trash. It doesn't sound exciting. It doesn't feel like theory becoming practice, praxis, having to take out the trash. No, and no one, while taking out the trash, does it scream, this is the gospel, right? There's no aha moment when you lift the lid of the dumpster. And yet, the trash still needs to be taken out. There arises an often unspoken tension between the things that we do not want to do and the things that still need to get done. And one of the best lines I heard this last week from a speaker at this conference we attended was, it's really not about doing all of the things or even that you have to do more, but it is about doing and finding the things that you and only you can do. What can you imagine yourself being a part of in this community that's not only transformational experience for you, but also a transformational experience for our community? Not because it was new and exciting, but because you embodied the wholeness of the gospel in participating in this body of faith. Some of us will have to do some spiritual work, some deep spiritual digging for some of these answers. There is something that the pastors and maybe seasoned ministry leaders can help us guide us to, you know. But as we open this can of worms, asking the questions like, what is it look like for our church to be something that we want to be a part of? What does it look like when we're proud of our church? Or you know, what does the church really need? When we ask these questions, it's a whole can of worms, because we also have to ask the hard questions of, what are you willing to do to contribute to making this happen? Because it doesn't happen by itself. What kind of church do we want to be a part of in this side, on this corner of Riverside? You know, I remember when I was in college, I did a lot of church hopping because I was looking for that church. I was looking for the church that had all the schnazzy things, because I wanted to go to that trendy church that had all of the ministries that I wanted to go to that already were happening. You know, the one with the beautiful concert lights, for me it was attractive then, with the great music. The one that had the cafe that was made out of the wooden pallets and then it had succulents at centerpieces on the tables. That's the church I wanted. I was all about that. And I was determined, and I would church hop to find that, you know. You know the church that gives away the pens and the snacks at the end of each service? They're committed. You know, I am a ham for pens and snacks. Please don't bring me pens or snacks. I have a lot. But now, you know, it's interesting that maybe it's because I have had this sweet privilege to do life here with this community. You should know that you have ruined me. Because now I don't want to do church where you people are not present. Now for me, it's really not about taking, it's about taking this church and making it what I want to be a part of, but doing it here and digging roots here. Because this is where our relationships are deeply rooted. And as I walk up and down the halls of the children's Sabbath schools and I see kids running to greet each other, and then they're greeting their teachers with excitement, and then greeting the greeters that they're now getting to know, because the greeters are consistently there. Like, where's Florence? Mrs. Florence, who stands just here at the bottom, and she'll say, "Hattie, good morning, I'm so happy that you're here this Sabbath." Just like that. She's probably better at it than I am. It's the worst impression of her. Please don't tell her if she's not here. But she is the best at what she does right there, and the kids know to expect her, and they love her, and this is their church because she is there to tell them that this is their church. And I am convinced that I want to be a part of a church that's already sold out on itself, and that it's teaching its little ones, its young ones, that church is the people who make it come alive. So how do we be a part of this church, Pastor Bev? Some of the people that we saw on the screen would love more hands on deck to help them carry the load. Or maybe you saw something up there that didn't really call out to you. Maybe something that we mentioned hasn't been something that is exciting to you. Like, you don't really like to hike or knit or sing, all of those things. And you are feeling yet this tug in your stomach, in the pit of your stomach, and you've been feeling this for a while, that says it's now your turn to be a part of the praxis in this place, and you still don't know how to get involved. Well, today, we've asked a few people, a few members here, to stand by and help us with what it means to find something that fits. So please don't leave without starting a conversation with, there's going to be 3 or 4 people up here, and they're going to be ready to take questions. They'll have a list of things that you can look at to participate in. If you're not even sure where to start, we want to have the conversation with you. Please do not leave this space without having a conversation, without starting a conversation about how you can be a part of this space. You know, there's a huge risk that we take when we leave others to make decisions for us in our community. We leave others to create the picture of church for us. This is the last story I have for you here, but something that I learned a few years ago when, I think it was 3 years ago, also in San Antonio, Chris, being in the lower level of the Alamo Dome, where Wednesday night we had been taking the big vote. You know, and I remember towards the end of the vote, even though I knew what would likely be the outcome of that vote, there was a moment in which I wasn't able to breathe anymore. Because as the people were casting lots for 50% of the population because of their gender, I couldn't breathe. Because the message of the gospel to me was being perverted. That it only belonged to one category of people, that it only belonged to one group of thinkers, and I couldn't breathe. And I remember I left and I said, Chris, I can't. And I ran out. And then Chris followed me, and do you remember what you said to me? She hugged me because I couldn't breathe, I said to her. She said, I know. She said, but we get to go home after this. And I remember for the first time in that entire evening that I exhaled and that I could breathe. You want to know why? Because I imagine our church here, these active thinkers who embody the gospel in a way that wasn't just allowing me to do something, but was allowing me to be as the gospel has called me to be. And I imagine walking into the office and that Ellen was going to be greeting me. And that Margaret and Tammy were going to be stuffing the envelopes like they do every Thursday. And that Regina and Lorianne would be there greeting them. It was Jen answering emails, making phone calls. And I thought to myself, this is where life happens. This is where church is. So friends, thank you. You have ruined my experience in such a good way. But I hope that we know, that I know, that this is your church. This is my church. This is our church. And what we do is embodying the gospel in every form and in every way. Let's pray. God, we thank you for your goodness, as your love is big and it is large. And in this part of the gospel, your good news is that we are all a part of your community. So bless us, O God, as we find a way in which we get to move about this space, also preaching and embodying the gospel, God. Bless this community as it continues to rally, as it continues to be a beautiful presence on this corner, in this piece of Riverside, growing in the church and spreading the gospel. In Jesus' name, amen.